This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the milk packing district, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The head of Fox apologizes for calling NPR Nazis. North Korea is building a nuclear reactor. And a $50,000 violin is missing in Corvallis.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, giddy, jubilant, jocular,
exultant,
possibly jocund, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, seek shelter, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, November 19th, 2010. Satellite images obtained by a Washington, D.C.-based research group suggest that North Korea is building a nuclear reactor near a destroyed nuclear cooling tower, the New York Times reported today.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that awesome?
No, it's terrifying.
Wait, no, that's bad.
I'm sorry. No.
We don't want that.
I'm sorry. No, wrong.
Two American nuclear experts who visited the Yongbyon site earlier this month said they were told by North Korean officials that Pyongyang was at work on an experimental light water reactor slated to open before the 100th anniversary of the birth of the country's founding president.
Is that like their centennial celebration?
Fireworks at a nuclear reactor.
We have a parade and we have children marching through town and they're doing some sort of a light twirling thing while everybody sells ice cream and then North Korea is just going to attack everyone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Experts at the Institute for Science and International Security say that light water reactors are usually used for generating electricity and are considered relatively safe. However, these values could vary depending on the design of the reactor and whether it will be optimized for electricity production or weapon-grade plutonium production for weapons.
Uh-huh.
The previous reactor at Yongbyon was disassembled as part of a 2008 agreement.
Disassembled?
Disassembled. They took it apart. Much like the one of a Trojan.
You don't even know what I was doing there.
No, I don't.
Okay.
What were you doing?
Nah, it's okay. My peeps out there, they know.
Okay, good. That was for that 1%.
I'd say 2.
Yeah. The previous reactor at Yongbyon was disassembled as part of...
At where?
Yongbyon.
Okay.
I am pronouncing that correctly, I'll have you know. Uh-huh. I want props for also having said the other one correctly. What was the other one? Pyongyang. So thank you. I'm on a roll this morning. I'm pronouncing things correctly. Never mind. Anyway, according to the Times, North Korea is believed to have enough plutonium for 6 nuclear bombs. So, hooray!
Calling it a nuclear bomb seems strangely outdated.
You know, if you're going to go to the extent of creating yourself a nuclear reactor, get yourself a nuclear missile. You know, get yourself a nuclear bomb.
Well, I think that's why they started just generalizing and calling everything weapons of mass destruction, because it's like sometimes it's a missile, sometimes it's a bomb.
You know, bomb
sometimes
you gotta,
it's just something buried under the dirt that your Jeep goes over.
Bomb, you got to fly over a place. You got to get a guy to carry a suitcase into a thing, onto a train, into a station, up to, you know, to, you know, to, into the middle of a place. In a missile, you can just sit at home and press a button and then have tea, take a nap, something like that. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. This is... one second, and there we go. This is Dawn Taylor, who is at the news desk providing you information of all varieties, forms, and fashions, including but not limited to Science on the March later this hour, as well as your entertainment news. By the way, don't forget, you can also get this program on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm, or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com, also at iTunes. Once again, Dawn Taylor.
While I read this next story, would you grab the stack O stuff off the printer?
Absolutely.
Thank you. After a dump of fresh snow, Mount Hood Meadows Ski Resort plans to open for the 2010-11 season this coming Saturday. Resort officials said the latest storm has dropped 2 feet of snow in just the past 24 hours alone. Now the base has 40 inches, with more on its way. A limited number of lifts will operate from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and ticket prices will be adjusted accordingly. Operations were expected to continue daily for the season, and more lifts and terrain will be opened as the resort receives more snow. Timberline Ski Area, also on Mount Hood, opened on the last Friday in October. That ski area has only managed to open before Halloween three different times in its 50-year history. So,
snow.
You don't ski, do you, Mr. Emerson?
What do you think? Really, I mean, if you had to, like, if you had to place money on that wager, where would you come down? Do I ski?
Do you build
That's one of those things.
Snowmen or anything?
You just asked that to fill time. That is the definition of a question that you already knew the answer to, that you asked because you needed to pick some stuff up at the table and sort through it. And you thought, so, do you do any fishing?
And I think also, I knew there'd be a good answer to it, but I really didn't expect there to be just the derisive sneer that accompanied that. No. Skiing.
I'm just saying. You know, I think Sonny Bono demonstrated to us that maybe going up an ice and snow covered hill that nature has tried to keep you off of is not the best way to spend your afternoon. You are listening to Legion of News. Don't forget, coming up later on today at 1 o'clock or shortly thereafter, following a brief musical interlude, it's the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. Coming up today, we have a corpse watch. Also, our friend Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with us. He'll be doing another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life, career, and legacy of Mr. Sam Kinison. We've also got a top five on the way. That is all coming up later this afternoon on the Rick Emerson radio program. This is Dawn Taylor.
In the wake of the midterm elections that saw major Republican gains on Capitol Hill, Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid says during the lame duck session this week and in the coming Congress, Democrats will not get sidetracked.
The American people elected us to do something about this economy.
How's that working out for you?
He acknowledged the election results, which will bring more GOP members to the Senate as well as a House takeover.
We reach our hands out to the Republicans. We want them to work with us as they didn't do the last 2 years.
I have nothing to say about Harry Reid. I will say this, that I don't know, 9 times out of 10 when his name was in the news and they would say Harry Reid, it's like that thing yesterday when you said somebody was Australian. But in my head, as soon as you went to the I immediately heard just autistic. And so then I started fabricating an entire version of the story in which the guy just stared at a window and then occasionally screamed and broke things. That was all like in the, you know, in the half second or so before I processed the fact that you'd said Australian. So it is with Harry Reid, and I think I'm not the only guy who does this. The vast majority of the stories they would talk about that guy, my brain would just hear the Harry Reid, and I would get to Harry Reams of Deep Throat fame. And then I would start creating some alternate world in which a you know big mustachioed porn star from Park City was a member of Congress.
I think if you're going to name your child anything, like Harry, for example, or any other word that could be a descriptive term, you should make sure that your last name is not also something that sounds like a noun.
Yes. No, I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah, that's just one of the rules, one of the first rules of naming a child. The Gert Boyle robbery and kidnapping plot took another twist Thursday when Hillsborough police confirmed that officers were warned of a possible kidnapping just hours before the former Columbia Sportswear boss was tied up and robbed. Police say they were only given partial names and addresses, that it was an unspecified threat, and they simply didn't have enough to go on. According to Hillsborough Police, officers got the call on November 10th, warning of a potential crime. When officers checked it out, they learned a woman had information that a kidnapping might happen in the next 24 hours.
Somewhere.
But police didn't know where, when, or who.
Okay.
Hillsborough Police say an officer wrote up a report and turned it in around 4 p.m.
That's not really a tip. That's just a hint.
I heard these guys talking about doing something. Well, to who? I don't know.
That's just somebody surmising something. That's not even... I don't even know that it qualifies as a hint. That's just, you know... That's an out loud pondering.
But the Hillsborough Police did write up a report about 4 p.m. and they were going to send it out to other police agencies. And then less than 2 hours after that, the kidnappers hit Mrs. Boyle's house and attempted to kidnap her.
What would be the upshot of sending it out to other police agencies, though? Like, seriously, what preventative measures would that have allowed them to take?
Covering their asses in case something actually happens.
I mean, apart from that.
Nothing.
It doesn't even really cover their ass, too, because their ass doesn't need covering in this case.
Well, but there is always
I think
always
a crime might be happening somewhere in the next day. Just FYI.
Yeah, but that's how these things work, though. Then a crime actually does happen, and then later, somewhere down the line, it's like, somebody went to the police and they didn't do anything. You know, and so they say, well, yes, we did. We wrote up a report and we sent it out to other agencies.
I answered the phone and then I nodded and then I hung the phone back
up. I wrote it down. See, I did something. You know, and say, oh, okay, you did something. So Lieutenant Mike Ruches of the Hillsborough Police Department said, certainly our officers wish that we had better information to be able to try and get someone. But we had no idea about West Lynn or never had a hard target, and we never knew who the target was in this case. So, yay, police. The public hearing has been scheduled next week to discuss a proposed annual vehicle registration fee that would support a new Selwood Bridge. If the plan is approved, the new fee would begin in 2011. $5 per year would be added to the cost of registering a car in Clackamas County. Clackamas County has committed to providing $22 million to the Selwood Bridge project. The county commission estimated the proposed registration fee would cover that amount. The bridge is in Portland, a few miles from Clackamas County, but is most often used by Clackamas County commuters. Ellen Ruggelin of the Clackamas County Department of Transportation said, of the approximately 30,000 cars that use the bridge daily, 21,000, about 70%, are going to or coming from Clackamas County. This bridge serves as a vital connection over the Willamette River and the only one in the 12-mile stretch from Oregon City to Portland.
Now, they don't have to register vehicles every year in Clackamas, though, do they?
No, you just
So they would prorate it over. This is a cost that would be amortized over the cost of, you know, the 3 or 5 years or whatever it is that you have to register your car now.
Something like that.
Okay, so it'd be like $60 or something when you went in to get it done. Okay.
And, you know, probably worth it if you actually, you know, drive on the Selwood Bridge, which is a death trap.
For the cost of not collapsing into the river and dying in a puddle of rocks and screams, yes.
Yes, the 85-year-old bridge, which is frankly terrifying to drive across, is expected to cost between $290 to $330 million to replace it.
It seems like for that much money, we could just get rid of the bridge. I mean, because nobody drives on it now, right?
I think we should go back to the fair. Well, no. No, no, indeed.
Who do you know that voluntarily drives over the Selwood Bridge?
Well, I don't know that many people who commute back and forth to Clackamas County.
All I'm saying is
30,000 cars use the bridge daily.
How do they know that?
They're the Department of Transportation. They know these things.
Really? Did someone call and give them a hint? We think a lot of people use the bridge.
Those homeless guys that you think are just standing there with cardboard things asking you to give them money because they were supposed to be...
They got a clicker?
Bets. They get clickers. They're counting the bridges. That's how they actually make their money.
I'm just saying, if you were to ask them, how much is it going to cost? $300 million?
Yeah.
I'm saying if you ask the people of Selwood right now, would you rather we just give you the $300 million and everybody else can find a different bridge? I think you'd have a show of hands at like the 90s. Right,
I think we should go back to the ferry system where you have like a guy... And you drive your car into the ferry, and it drives you across the river.
A guy with a cap named Smitty.
Have you ever been on the Canby ferry? Because there is actually still an operating ferry in Canby that goes across the river. And you drive your car up.
To where?
To the other side.
To the other side of Canby?
Well, no. One side is in Canby, and the other side's in Milwaukee? I'm not sure. Whatever is on the other side of the river from Canby. And
are people really like that excited to get to Milwaukee? I can't wait to go to Milwaukee. It's going to be an entire outing for the family.
I don't know.
Get your hats and scarves.
It's really cool. It costs $3 and you drive up and then you drive onto the ferry and then they slowed. It's like that raft to get you to Tom Sawyer's Island at Disneyland, except
you're going to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the.
But at least it takes a long time to get there.
It's the journey, not the destination.
Okay. I would hope the journey is exceptional in that case, because the destination is of negligible value.
It is very cool, actually. It's a really pretty little stretch of the river where they do it, and it only takes, like, you know, 5 or 10 minutes. But it's just very, very cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm too much a child of the modern age. To me, the idea that you're going to get on a thing and it's going to, you know, you just have to sort of take a long time to get somewhere, especially a place that you probably don't want to go to. I guess I don't understand the essential appeal of ferries. Like, if they had a ferry that was just like a rocket ferry that you just got on and it shot you to the other side of the river in 40 seconds, I'd be all for that. I think the idea of lagging in your trip somewhere, the essential appeal of that is lost on me.
What about the ones that are, like, really, like, the big boats that ferry you across? It's like the one up in Seattle.
Well, like in Seattle that goes to Canada or whatever?
Yeah. Well, there's one, it's Bremerton, and it goes, like, Seattle to Bremerton.
Well, and there's one that goes to, like...
It's really neat.
And there's one that'll go to, like, Bainbridge Island and stuff like that.
So that you're in favor of... Short ferry trips, Rick Emerson says nay. Long ferry trips, Rick Emerson says, well, perhaps.
Well, I don't really know that I have, like, a strong opinion about ferry trips one way or the other. I'm just saying, you know, all things being equal, I'd rather stay at home in my underwear. That's really the... And if I'm not, I want the end result to be something more rewarding than going to Milwaukee. That's the only point I make. It's just like it's like traveling by pony to have a guy kick you in the face. You know, you're just spending a day trekking through the desert so a guy can put fire ants down your pants. I mean, what is the, you know... I mean, not literally that.
Well, no.
It's you're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Later on this hour, your entertainment news coming up a little bit after 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson radio program over at rickemerson.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
The Benton County Sheriff's Office is seeking information about a missing violin whose Corvallis, Oregon owner says has been appraised at $50,000. It's not clear when the instrument vanished, but Jennifer Joy, the owner, says she last saw it during the summer, according to a published report. She says she had the family heirloom tucked in what she thought was a safe place in her mobile home, but when she went to tune it earlier this month, it was missing.
I think I've discovered the flaw in her plan there. A safe place in her mobile home.
Yes.
If the entire home can be carted away by anybody who has, like, you know, a Ford and a trailer hitch, it seems like maybe your security is finite.
Well, she says she has renter's insurance, but her violin was not insured. The violin is described as bearing a partially illegible label inscribed Aloysius Marconcini, Bologna, 1767. So if you see that, line around.
So, of course, the place you'd keep this is in a mobile home.
Yes, your $50,000 violin.
All right.
Why don't you... I don't know, sell the violin and get a better place to live.
Yeah, I was gonna say that too, but I didn't want to be hateful.
Oh, I'll take care of that for you.
Okay.
Yeah. The Oregon Zoo is taking part in a 3-year study of elephants at zoos across the nation to determine the best ways to manage and care for them. The Oregon Zoo will join 6 other institutions to begin the research next month. The study is being coordinated by the Honolulu Zoo Society and funded by an $800,000 grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services.
I wonder if they're going to pull the elephants on the best way to keep them there and whether an option is going to be not put them in a cage for all of their natural lives.
I think that's probably the top of their list,
yes.
Maybe not be in a zoo.
Sort of a write-in blank there.
Second on the list, don't kill me for my ivory. Please.
Please do not chainsaw my tusks off.
Yeah. Officials said the study will involve the entire population of 290 elephants housed in zoos, accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, including the Oregon Zoo's Asian elephant herd. The director of the Oregon Zoo, Kim Smith, says there has never been such an extensive study on zoo elephants, and the results will help improve their overall care. The Senate is expected to take up the Paycheck Fairness Act. Didn't we read this before?
No, this is a follow-up story, and if you remember correctly... We had the first half of the story, which came out earlier this week, and the soundbite was uncooperative because it cut off like halfway through, and the second soundbite was that, like, the corrupted file.
So we are revisiting this basically to correct your errors.
I'm not revisiting anything. The news, and that's not an error with me. That's an error with science. Mm. So I'm not revisiting a damn thing. You know what? I get paid just fine. I got a penis, and I'm white, and everything works out well for me. So it doesn't matter to me. This news is immaterial to my life, Don, but I thought you, as a member of the weaker sex, might be interested in knowing how your sisters were looking out for you.
Well,
you know, Sarah Palin, by the way, has already...
That's considerate,
Palin has redeemed the, you know, the good name of women, because she is proving that women, you know, can make it in the world of politics. Sarah Palin, a role model for tomorrow's youths.
You really are going to start saying that.
Yes, I am. I'm saying it now. I've begun. I've already said it. I said it yesterday.
So this is, going to be an ongoing thing where you're going to keep saying this in the hopes that someone just punches you.
Well, I'm going to have to, I'll have to seek somebody out.
At some point, a woman will kick you.
No, but seriously, it's like, how can, it doesn't seem like a thing that, you, and when I say you, I mean the collective you, doesn't seem like a thing that you could really, you could take that much offense at. I mean, any progress is good progress, I would imagine. Right? It's through incremental steps that gains are made. Mm. Maybe you don't want that particular woman to be president, but I think we can all agree that it'd be good if the remaining glass ceiling was shattered, would it not be? That's right. We can't agree on that. So I'm just saying, so we're all on the same page.
Okay.
We're all brethren under the skin, Dawn and Sistrin.
The Senate is expected to take up the Paycheck Fairness Act, a bill that amends current laws to end pay discrimination based on sex. Labor Secretary Hilda Solis says critics are trying to overthink the bill.
By the way, you can tell that she's hot because her name is Hilda.
Hilda Solis.
That's really where the hot chicks are found, in places where they name chicks Hilda and Inga. All right, this is what? Equity 2 or 3?
Equity 1.
Equity 1. I think we've actually played Equity 1.
Oh, well, we are revisiting this entire story. We are just taking a running start and heading right back
all
at
right.
it.
Well, I'll just do these last two.
There's still women who are working that only get 70 cents on the dollar.
Oh, I'm sorry. This
it's
is the one
a common
right
sense bill that will actually help provide women, give them the tools so that they can obtain equal pay for equal
does it
work.
Say where
a very
she...
simple concept.
Does it say where she's actually at, where she's from? You might have said that I missed it. Does it say from where she hails, from an organization?
She's the labor secretary.
The labor secretary. And her name is Hilda?
Hilda Solis.
Okay.
Which I believe is a Hispanic name, and I only know that because I believe...
Hilda?
Yeah, there are Hispanic women named Hilda.
Okay.
But Solis is the last name of that Eva Longoria character on Desperate Housewives.
Excellent.
And I have no idea why I know that. Solis disputes critics who say this will make it easier to file frivolous lawsuits.
I don't think it's something that's necessarily going to require a settlement in the court. I think that's the easy way to get out of not supporting this bill, and that's what our opponents are saying.
See? And so Rick Emerson, though, is going all the way. I mean, Rick Emerson is slingshotting around the sun and taking the other side of this issue. Rick Emerson at the forefront of women's issues.
Well, you do care about the ladies.
Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
A role model, an inspiration.
Please stop.
Someone after whom young girls can pattern themselves.
Oh, God. See, now you're just trying to make me queasy.
I'm just saying, because young girls, you know, children who our greatest natural resource, our future, Don, they may say, you know, there is no one who looks like me in the White House. There is no one to whom I can aspire to be like. There's no one I can model myself after. And I say, no, young children. Sarah Palin stands, astride the horizon.
You know, just because someone can be a role model doesn't mean someone should be a role model.
I'm just saying. I'm just, I'm trying to be a forward thing. I'm trying to be progressive. This is Portland, after all.
Fox News chief Roger Ailes turned on the charm this week by repeatedly calling National Public Radio executives Nazis while on a tirade about the firing of former NPR news analyst Juan Williams earlier this year.
Excellent.
They are, of course, Nazis, Ailes told Howard Kurtz of the Daily Beast during an interview. They have a kind of Nazi attitude. They are the left wing of Nazism. These guys don't want any other point of view. They don't even feel guilty using tax dollars to spout their propaganda. They are basically Air America with government funding to keep them alive. Ailes apologized for the comments on Thursday in a letter to the Jewish Anti-Defamation League, saying he was ad-libbing and that he should have used the phrase, quote, nasty, inflexible bigot, instead of Nazi.
Hey, good for him. Okay, now you got to admire his style there at the end. To where even as I admire anybody who even while apologizing can put the boot in again. You know, when he said I should have said nasty, which by the way, I mean if you subtract the if you were to excise the Nazi the comment out of there, which is just here's the thing about the Nazi comparison. Is that I know that we're all supposed to be offended by that, but the thing is, it is not unlike the presidency of George W. Bush in that it is so ludicrous that one can almost not take offense at it. I mean, it's just so fundamentally absurd. Comparing anything to the Nazis is like how every band, it's like comparing a band to the Beatles or comparing a poet to Shakespeare. It's just so fundamentally absurd and nonsensical that it. I mean, it really takes a lot of work, I would say, to get upset about that sort of thing.
Well, the word itself has become, like, just the silliest of insults. It's kind of like if, Yes, it is a homophobic slur to call someone a homo. But the word itself is so ludicrous.
Well, when is the last?
That it's just kind of funny.
When's the last time you heard anybody compared to Nazis where it like actually made sense and wasn't wildly disproportionate?
Yeah. See,
like
yeah.
Never. I can't remember the last time I saw someone compared to Hitler where in any way or shape or form I went, well, I could kind of see that. Like, that is here's the thing about calling somebody a Nazi. It's a thing that is now only used ironically. I mean, that's the deal. That is a comparison that is now only used when it doesn't make any sense at all. It's never used accurately. It's kind of like retard. How retard is not actually used by the people who are mentally underdeveloped or impaired or slow or whatever. You know, it's a thing that is now, by definition, only used for people to whom it doesn't actually apply.
That's true. Yeah. Let's do some science news.
Here's your science on the march for Friday.
So people will feel less retarded.
Right here at Legion of News. And, you know, by the way, I think retarded was actually a word that was phased in so we would quit using the words that medical textbooks used at the time, words such as imbecile.
Yeah, idiot.
So, yeah, I'm just saying.
Well, this first science story was sent to me by an alert listener who believed that it would, and I am quoting him here, bend Rick's mind.
Okay.
Physicists from the Imperial College London and Salford University in northwestern England revealed this week that they're working on a space-time cloak that would, in essence, render the wearer invisible by manipulating light. The theory is based on censoring the flow of events, which we perceive as a stream of light particles, also called photons, that strike the retina. By exploiting a characteristic of fiber optics, the flow of photons can be slowed, events edited out, and stitched back together.
Is there an obligatory reference to Harry Potter in this story?
No, thank God.
Okay.
A safecracker would be able, for a brief time, to enter a scene, open the safe, remove its contents, close the door and exit the scene, whilst the record of a surveillance camera apparently showed the safe door was closed all the time, according to the paper. The theory is expounded in a daunting series of equations and diagrams in the Journal of Optics, published by the Institute of Physics. It would work thanks to different light intensities that affect the refractory index in optical fiber, the cable widely used in telecoms. The refractory index is a determinant of the speed with which the light is transported in the cable. In the example of the safecracker, the leading segment, the image of the unmolested safe, would be slowed down. The middle segment of the robber opening the safe and making off with the contents would be edited out, disappearing into a spatio-temporal void. And the final segment of the safe room, apparently untouched, would be accelerated so it catches up with the leading segment.
Are you under the impression I understand anything you are talking about?
Yes. It makes perfect sense.
Okay.
By manipulating the way the light illuminating the event reaches the viewer, it's possible to hide the passage of time.
It's not possible. It's not possible. I'm just saying it right now.
Physicists say that it is possible.
It's not happening.
Because basically...
I defy a physicist anywhere to show me this actually taking place.
Well, they do say the theory has yet to be tested or confirmed
okay.
in a lab.
There we go.
But
right. So they are
confident that they can do it.
Einstein was confident that we could travel to the other side of the solar system in the blink of an eye and move backward in time and, you know, kill our own father at the Battle of Verdun. But I don't think anybody's actually done any of those things. That's just stuff that they say when they're up late and stoned at 2:30 in the morning because they know that the vast number of people on Earth are dumb enough that we can't quite argue it. You know what I'm saying?
I think you just don't want to believe that...
magic?
That we are going to start bending space-time through the acceleration of light particles.
My mind already exists in four dimensions, Dawn. It can't be bent. My brain already exists in a sort of cubist fashion.
Well, you tell that to the listener who said it would bend your mind.
Didn't we talk about this last week as being one of those stories that they come up with about every 6 months? I mean, an invisible cloaking device. And it's because they always talk about, you know, once the province of Hogwarts, now blah, blah, blah. And so they do that in the corpse flower story, like, back to back all year.
Yeah. By the way, I went to a movie last night, and it was at Bridgeport Cinema, which was having a midnight showing of Harry Potter on the IMAX
screen. You sent me the photograph of that. There was nerds capped out everywhere.
Yeah, when I left the movie, I was out at about 9 o'clock. I swear to God, there were like 1,200 people there. They were up and down both sides of that street outside of where the movie theater is.
Yeah.
It was insane.
And it was raining, too. And it was raining, and it was like ass cold outside.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Basking in the glow of your TV, smartphone, or living room lights late into the night may put you at a risk for depression, suggests a new study. The research, which involved hamsters, adds to growing evidence in both peoples and animals, that exposure to even dim lights at night can lead to all sorts of negative health consequences, including breast cancer, sleep disorders, and weight gain. We've set up a link between exposure to light at night with depressions in these animals, said Tracy Bedrosian, a doctoral student in neuroscience at Ohio State University. If it does apply to humans, people might want to think about getting dark shades, not leaving the TV on all night long,
or not being a hamster,
and making sure to give themselves darkness when they go to sleep. Major depression has grown more common in recent decades, and while there is probably no single reason for the trend, researchers suspect that light disturbances may play a part. That suspicion is based in part on the simple observation that people today are exposed to far more sources of artificial light at night than they were 100 years ago. More people have computers in their bedrooms, more people fall asleep with the TV on. Studies have also found that people who work night shifts have higher rates of mood disorders compared to people who sleep when their bodies are supposed to sleep. So yeah, so they split a group of 16 hamsters into two groups. All the animals spent 16 hours a day under bright lights. During the rest of the time, eight of the hamsters were given true darkness. The other eight were exposed to dim lights at the level similar to the glow of the TV. And the darkness-deprived hamsters got depressed.
It's hard to imagine why, if you were a hamster who was just being kept in a cage and poked and prodded and deprived of sleep by a big guy in a lab coat who was eventually going to put your body in an incinerator anyway, I can't imagine why you would ever be down in the dumps about things. What are you going to do? You just wake up every day and, I love my life! No, you're not.
And I can't sleep. Why won't they let me sleep?
Seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know any more saccharin. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining today's parade of absurdities and banalities. You are listening to this program courtesy of many of our fine business partners, including Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. That is how you can contact those fine folks. Claire Grebel, who's a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, is now in downtown Portland operating Castalia Language Center so that you might learn Spanish in a way that is more conducive to actual retention than you probably did when you were going to high school or going to college, when everything just seemed to consist of memorizing a lot of stuff for the space of about 44 minutes and then forgetting it later on.
Kind of like what they do to the hamsters.
It's exactly what it is, Dawn. And not a regular hamster, too, but one of those weird pink-eyed albino hamsters that's also sterile. I don't understand how they can breed sterile hamsters. That doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
Well, the same way they can breed donkeys.
Where do you get more sterile hamsters?
Well, from fertile hamsters.
Right, but do you see how that just ends real quickly?
Well, yes, but you're just going to end up, like, testing, you know, lipstick on them and pouring drain cleaner into their eyes, and
you just get the
anyway.
One. But I'm saying you just get the one generation.
Yeah, like donkeys.
Okay,
you know donkeys
it's not
are
at
sterile,
all,
right?
It's not at all like donkeys. I'm saying no, but a donkey—that's two different animals that you've bred together.
Right, but they're sterile.
Right.
And so there are no more. So the sterile donkeys can't breed more donkeys.
No,
it's the same way with sterile
I know
hamsters.
What sterile means. I'm asking. Nah, never mind. In any event, you can find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com. When you go to Castalia Language Center, you're going to be put in a class with no more than seven of your compatriots. It means a maximum class size of eight people. So you get near individualized attention, which means you're going to get faster results, and you're going to learn at the same rate in the same way as the other folks in the class. You find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Noodles, cakes, porridge, and meat bones, dating to around 2,500 years ago, were recently unearthed at a Chinese cemetery, according to a paper that will appear in the Journal of Archaeological Science. Since the cakes were cooked in an oven-like hearth, the findings suggest that the Chinese may have been among the world's first bakers. Prior research determined the ancient Egyptians were also baking bread at around the same time, but this latest discovery indicates that individuals in northern China were skillful bakers who likely learned baking and other more complex cooking techniques much earlier. The residents may have been living in a semi-agricultural pastoral artist community, since a pottery workshop was also found nearby, and each person was buried with pottery. The archaeologists also found bows, arrows, saddles, leather chest protectors, boots, wooden wares, knives, an iron awl, a leather scabbard, and a sweater in the graves.
A sweater?
A sweater.
Okay.
But scientists focused on this particular study on the excavated food. The food included noodles mounded in an earthenware bowl, sheep's heads, which may have had symbolic meaning, another earthenware bowl full of porridge, and elliptical-shaped cakes, as well as round baked goods that resembled modern Chinese mooncakes. Chemical analysis of the starches revealed that both the noodles and cakes were made of common millet, which had been put through a barrage of cooking experiments, and they tried to duplicate the microstructure of the foods, and they determined that, you know, anyway.
That's a hell of a long time for a cake to exist.
Yeah, well, it was in an arid desert area, so all of the bodies were, like, in really excellent condition, and all of the food and everything they found was really, really well preserved, because it had been in just a very dry, arid environment for all that time. So, yeah, baking. 2,500 years ago.
Okay.
Chinese people. The Philadelphia Eagles will add solar panels and wind turbines at their home stadium, saying Thursday will be the world's first stadium with self-generating renewable energy. The American Football Club's joint venture with Solar Blue, a Florida firm that will invest $30 million in the project over the next year, will also include a dual-fuel cogeneration plant at Lincoln Financial Field. The Philadelphia Eagles are proud to take this vital step towards energy independence from fossil fuels, said Eagle owner Jeffrey Lurie. The plan, scheduled to be finished in time for next September's start of the 2011 National Football League season, will see 80 spiral-shaped wind turbines attached to the top of the stadium and 2,500 solar panels installed. Natural gas and biodiesel fuel will power the plant. With this groundbreaking initiative, the Eagles are taking another significant step forward in their commitment to environmental responsibility, said NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. The NFL is proud to support the Eagles as they set the right example for all of sports.
This isn't that thing where they're going to be burning, like, dog poo or something, is it? That was some city, I guess, in England or someplace.
Yeah, that was a park.
And they were going to be powering streetlights or something.
But right.
They should just power the Eagle Stadium off the assembled belches of the thousands of drunken fans who are in the stadium drinking so-called super beers for $9.50.
And just their collective hate
right.
of the opposite team.
Exactly. And people, let's not have any illusions of this. People in Philadelphia have a lot of hate. They had to just have it. I mean, they actually just named the team the Philadelphia Haters. If you've ever known anybody from Philadelphia, they're just angry about it. They put New Yorkers to shame, really, in many ways. Because New Yorkers, at least, have got it. It's sort of well-rounded. If you meet somebody from New York, it's like, you know, yeah, they're full of aggro and agita. But, it's, you know, but they've also got the, what do you call that, culture? Culture? And, you know, you meet people from Philadelphia and it's like they've just isolated and distilled only the hate isotope of that particular compound. And that's what they specialize in.
That is where that Munir Museum is, though.
Also, they've got tasty cakes there, which, you know, I'm a big fan of those.
And cheesesteak.
That's right. So, right. Here is Don Taylor.
That's all the science.
All right. Here's your end of science news for your Friday right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Speaking of science, this program is available later on today via iTunes, also as a direct MP3 download here, or legionofnews.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
House Republicans have rejected a bill that would extend benefits to millions of out-of-work Americans for 3 months, reports the Wall Street Journal.
Because who needs those?
At the moment, benefits for those unemployed for more than 26 weeks are set to expire on November 30th. Republicans argued that the $12 billion cost of the program must be offset by spending cuts. Some Republicans have expressed support for extending benefits, but Democrats failed to get the two-thirds majority needed after bringing the bill up for a vote under fast-track procedures. Democrats can take a more arduous route to securing benefits by floating the bill under regular debate rules, but may encounter resistance in the Senate over the cuts needed to cover the bill's cost. Democrats anticipated that the bill would fail under fast-track procedures, but tried it anyway as an act of political theater that cast the GOP in an unflattering light. Because really
that, is that it? Is that, it
that's the best use of their time, isn't it?
Well, what need is there at this point for any activity or exercise to, quote, cast the GOP in an unflattering light?
They've already said that their first goal is just to get rid of health care.
I mean, and their second goal, and this is a thing that people haven't really talked about, because they think it doesn't really affect them, and I guess it probably doesn't, except in a ripple effect sort of way. You know, their second thing that they announced, so the first thing was like, first we're going to get rid of health care, and vast numbers of Americans, for reasons lost to me, went, ah. And then the second thing was that they were just going to fire people. And the reason they were able to get away with that is because they're people who work for the government. And when you think of people that work for the government, everybody's in favor of firing them because you think of, like, the guy from the—you think of mean Mr. Potter from the IRS. Well, you know, it's like everybody you know who's a school teacher works for the government.
Yeah.
Everybody you know who works for the post office works for the government. Everybody you know who comes by and, you know, and like picks up crap in your gutter works for the government. And so, you know, Boehner's first thing was, first we're going to get rid of health care, then I'm going to fire people, as many as I possibly can. And everyone just kind of went, well, all right, at least he's got a plan. So, you know, the idea that the Democrats are going to spend a lot of their time trying to make Republicans look, you know, kind of cranky, that didn't really seem like the best investment of your time.
Yeah, my favorite quote here, apparently Republicans say they do support unemployment benefits in principle, but need to be mindful of the electorate's desire for fiscal prudence.
Okay, that's great.
You know, all those people that, like, don't have jobs, they want the government to be fiscally prudent. So the goal is just to not give them any more money.
They admire unemployment benefits in theory, not in actuality or in point of fact or in any way where they'll ever be paid out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a sort of abstract concept.
We'd like to give you money, but we won't.
Yeah.
More than 2,000 fetuses were discovered in a Buddhist temple in Bangkok, Thai authorities announced today, saying that the site had been used as a dumping grounds for nearby abortion clinics. Police were called in to investigate a, quote, strong smell at the temple this week, and initially found the remains of 348 fetuses. After arresting two undertakers and a woman accused of carrying out the abortions...
Oh, so these weren't like ancient fetuses. I thought these were fetuses like the Chinese cakes.
No.
Where they'd just been there for 3,000 years and it was a guy going, you know, for Sparta! And
no.
Throwing, you know, some... throwing it like a deformed kid off a mountain.
No, these are recent fetuses.
How hard is it to just... I mean, okay, fine. Don't they have a place for those, like, at the clinic? Isn't there a tube or a slot or something? That you put them down and then the squirrels see if they're bad nuts?
Well, Colonel Sambat Milantanchinda said he is the area commander of the Bangkok Metropolitan Police. He said, from our interrogation of the morticians, they admitted that they have been receiving fetuses for about 4 years, and they told us that they kept the fetuses until they dried up, so it's easy to burn them.
Okay. All right.
Abortions are illegal in Thailand, except in cases of rape when the mother's health is at risk or if the fetus is, quote, abnormal. In the wake of the discovery, Thai authorities have launched a crackdown on illegal abortion clinics.
Okay, I see. So this is sort of a... okay, so that's why, because they didn't have a legally operating clinic. So they didn't, you know, they didn't have the, you know, the appropriate tube down which you put everything when you're done or whatever. So they just had to, like... So this became just like the slot in the back of your medicine cabinet where you put razor blades.
Yeah.
Where are the babies going? I don't know, a building on the other side of town. Well, what happens when it gets full? I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find out. All right, I'm just checking.
A man in a minivan reportedly approached a middle school student Wednesday morning in Tigard and tried to get him into his vehicle. The principal at Fowler Middle School sent out a letter with students later that afternoon warning parents about the incident. Principal Shelley Corey urged parents to caution their children against approaching strangers and remind them to get license plate information if they are threatened by anyone in a vehicle. In Wednesday's incident, the student said he was waiting for a bus at the intersection of Lizzie Court and Washington Drive before school when the driver crossed over a lane of traffic and ordered the boy to get in his car just before 9 a.m. The student described the man as white, about 30 years old, with a goatee and a muscular build. He was wearing sunglasses and a lime green knit cap with strings hanging down. Sounds like Greg Nibbler. Dear God.
We are not saying that Greg Nibbler attempted to kidnap a child.
No.
That is not a thing we're saying or implying.
And he doesn't actually have a goatee.
Or a knit cap.
No.
He does kidnap children.
He does wear a knit cap, but not the kind with the strings.
Yes.
The student didn't see the rest of the man's clothing since he was sitting inside his van. Plus, I don't think Greg Nibbler owns a van. The student refused to get in the van and then ran home. His parent notified the school. So far, a suspect has not been found, and the police investigation continues.
Okay.
Remember when we were kids and there would be creepy guys in cars, and your parents would say, don't get in the car. And then you wouldn't, and then life would just go on. Now it's like in the news. Every time there's a creepy guy.
I guess maybe I skipped the part where the guy actually tried to get me in his car at one point. Or his soundproof van, which may or may not have been driven by Greg Nibbler. I mean, is the case, maybe.
There's the words free candy spray-painted on the side.
I've got a puppy at home. If you don't come see it, I'll kill it. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up a little bit after 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemerson.com. Today featuring Mr. Big Jim Willig, who's going to be in the studio to do another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today, the life and legacy of Mr. Sam Kennison. Also, a corpse watch coming up, and we'll talk a little bit more about Don Taylor's ringtone contest. At the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday.
A rare comic book an 84-year-old California man bought for a dime when he was a teenager has been sold in Texas for $492,937. The copy of Detective Comics number 27 featured the debut of The Batman. Robert Irwin says he bought the May 1939 issue from a Sacramento, California newsstand when he was 13, and it's the only comic book he kept from his youth. The winning bid came from a collector who wished to remain anonymous. He placed the bid by phone Thursday at an auction by Heritage Auctions in Dallas. Irwin, who attended the auction, said he is elated and wishes he had another one. Heritage sold a rare copy of that same comic in better condition for $1,075,000 in February.
Jesus, God. Well, it's like there's that group of nuns the other day that had like a Honus Wagner rookie card. It went for like some unbelievable, you know, like $250,000 or something. By the way, because I'm not much of a sports fan, I always thought that Honus Wagner was a guy who was made up. Because there's this, I don't believe this is in the movie, because I made it about 12 minutes into the movie and then I just pulled the ripcord. But in the novel Youth and Revolt, there's Nick Twisp has a friend named Lefty. So named because his member has a sort of a hook as it gets up to the, sort of slices as it gets to the, but he refers to his member in the letters to Nick detailing his sexual exploits. His member is always referred to as Honus Wagner. And so it's a lot of like, Honus Wagner finally scored a triple yesterday. And I just assumed that Honus Wagner was a thing that was made up because it was a funny name. But no, apparently real, and apparently the nuns had his card, and it was like $259,000 is some just like unbelievable amount.
I wonder if the nuns know that Honus Wagner was used as a name for a penis.
Nuns, they know more than you think. They're a savvy group, they are.
Bristol Palin is apologizing for herself and her younger sister for their Facebook rant against posters criticizing their family. Palin posted the apology on her Facebook page, saying she and her 16-year-old sister Willow, quote, shouldn't have reacted to negative comments about our family. We apologize. Willow Palin used a homophobic slur against a poster on her Facebook page who criticized her mother's new documentary series, Sarah Palin's Alaska.
Now, that series is actually on and airing now?
Yeah, I guess so.
So on what channel does it air?
I don't know, like TLC or...
Because I would have been watching that if I'd known that it was actually... Because the last thing I heard about it, I remember them talking about how she was going to get paid a lot and they were making plans to launch it and they were getting ready to film it. And then now it's already apparently aired. People have reacted to it. I mean, it's been on for so long that people have had time to react. We've had time to have a reaction to the reaction. And now there's a spin to the reaction to the reaction to a show that I didn't even know had already hit the airwaves.
Yeah. Of course, to be fair, these are kids that Willow Palin knows. So they were talking about how much the show about her family sucks.
Right, but I'm saying like...
So of course they would be watching it.
But I mean, has it been on for weeks, for months? It seems like something... All I'm saying is it seems like that show is, that's grist. That's grist for the comedic mill, or to inspire young women, depending on how you look at it. But probably the former, more than the latter in this case.
More gristy inspiry.
Yeah, I got to look it up. All right.
Go check that out. Burlesque co-stars Christina Aguilera and Cher bounded onto the set as Cher gave Aguilera her share of guy advice.
Her share?
Oh, yeah, that's on.
I see what you did there.
And they didn't bound onto the set. They bonded on the set. So, excuse me.
Unless they're kinkier than I thought.
Aguilera told people that one piece of advice Cher still sticks with her to this day. She told her, you know, honey, husbands come and go, but I am still Cher at the end of the day.
I don't think that's advice. That's just a statement.
Yeah, I don't think you can really advise someone else to be Cher.
You know, sometimes your husband skis into a tree, but what can you do?
We were like old chatty girlfriends that could not stop talking. They had to drag us to the set a few times because we were late, just talking about love and relationships and life. Yeah, okay. American Idol executive producer Nigel Lithgow revealed that this season will be cut down to the top 12 contestants instead of focusing on the top 24 singers. I didn't think the top 24 were very good, said Lithgow to TV Guide about past seasons. I was bored with them by the time they got there. Lithgow is also happy with new judges Jennifer Lopez and Steven Tyler, saying that they both listen intently and don't make glib remarks. They just give honest critiques. Wow, was that some kind of a slam at Ellen DeGeneres?
I suppose. I actually only watched... I watched one episode where Ellen was the judge, and I actually quite liked her. But I just... I kind of like... I'm a big fan of Ellen DeGeneres in general, and I am really not the best person to weigh in on this because I am not the American Idol, target audience or whatever. I like the idea of having actual musicians, you know, like a guy like Steven Tyler, doing this, or even Jennifer Lopez, who, has existed in the limelight to some degree. I mean, she's sort of,
But she told us, you know, produced and recorded professional music, so she knows what she's talking
about.
Yeah,
and I mean, and you know, and yeah, and she's existed in the limelight to some degree recently. I mean, a lot of that was back, you know, probably 10 years or so ago now. But I mean, she's, you know, more of a recent phenomenon than Paula Abdul. But I think the problem with Ellen DeGeneres is that they just steered too much in the opposite direction because they were trying to counteract the Simon Cowell thing. And, of course, he's just like a dick because that's his deal. But Ellen DeGeneres
was
just...
But he's always right, by the way.
And she was just too nice. That's the thing about Ellen DeGeneres. Is it's like you get this... She just never wanted to say anything bad about anyone, even when it was clearly true. You know, and not even, you know, in a horrible way. She just... She had that whole, like, never wanting to hurt anybody's feelings thing. Which doesn't really work if it, you know, at the end of the show, you're just going to be booting people off.
Yeah.
By the way, Sarah Palin's Alaska airs on, it does air on TLC. It is produced by Mark Burnett. Good for you, Mark Burnett, for Discovery Communications for air on TLC. So it is an 8-episode, which means I can probably just watch the whole thing in some sort of monologue.
Yeah.
Some sort of, or like, you know, marathon. I can just go through and just power load the entire thing over the course of a weekend.
Actor Christopher McDonald, who you'll know from movies like Happy Gilmore and Quiz Show, was involved in a car crash Tuesday night in West Hollywood, California. He was driving his Audi when another vehicle smashed into his car. Thankfully, he did not sustain any injuries in the crash. That doesn't seem like very newsy news.
No, and I was even looking for a chance to say, like, you know, like, if the crash had been more horrific, to say, you know, like, and his Audi became an innie, na-na-na, wah-wah, and then it was just nothing there. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm, the entertainment news portion of this program, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. And by the way, speaking of Greg Nibbler, when he's not busy driving around in a soundproof van, the walls of which are lined with any number of hooks and implements of, you know, various shapes and sizes, he and I are in here stringing the power cords together and then stopping and looking at each other and realizing that's exactly the kind of thing we shouldn't do. And so even as I pass this advice and this affirmation, you know, these observations along to you, realize that I, too, fall short of the grace of the glory of God. I occasionally will find myself just hooking. And it's always like, here's the thing about it. When you're hooking power cables together, you find yourself stringing cords across the room, or like when Christmas comes and you got like your tree, and then you get the thing that's on the, you know, the mantle of the fireplace, and then you got the little, like, the little Santa Claus outside that like pops out of a bag and says wah-wah or whatever, and then there's the thing on your roof, and then there's the, you know, you got the other thing.
Why does it say wah-wah?
And then the third thing, because that's what it does, because it's animatronic.
Why would Santa say wah-wah?
Why not, Don? Who are you to question the will of Santa?
Santa says ho-ho-ho. He doesn't say wah-wah.
Maybe in your world he says ho-ho-ho. That's like how cows in Germany say mek-mek. It's true. They do. Also, chickens, they don't cluck. They go knack. It's K-N-A-C-K. Knack. Are you done questioning Santa?
Yeah.
All right. Why do you hate Santa? Why are you a Nazi, Don Taylor?
I'm an anti-Santa Nazi.
That's right.
Which is not easy to say, by the way.
So when you find yourself just stringing all of those cables together, the worst thing about that is it's never, like, really high quality. Like, you never say, let me get 15 power strips that have shock and surge protection, and you know, or they're fire resist. It's always something you got for, like, $1.09, and you just, you know, you end up putting, like, 15 of those end-to-end. And then you stop and you look at each other and you say, maybe this isn't, like, the cleverest idea on earth. So before you get to that point, do yourself a favor. You call Squires Electric. That is 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Or you can go to SquiresElectric.com. They are fully licensed, insured, and bonded electrical contractors. No job too small or too large. So whether you've got a single socket or you've got an entire building that you're going to be working on, maybe coming up next year, you're going to be building a different house. Maybe you're going to be adding something onto your house. You're going to be remodeling, doing repairing. Maybe you've had smoke or water damage sometime over the course of the year. Maybe you're just getting your electrical system upgraded or your Ethernet system upgraded. They can handle all of that. Go to SquiresElectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Here is Don Taylor.
Eva Longoria Parker is divorcing her basketball-playing husband after accusing him of cheating with a look-alike teammate's wife. Longoria, 35, reportedly discovered that her husband, Tony Parker, 28, has been exchanging text messages
with... The look-alike teammate's wife. Why would you cheat with a wife who looked like a teammate?
I don't know. He's been exchanging naughty text messages with Erin Berry, the estranged wife of former San Antonio Spur Brent Berry, for nearly a year, including hundreds in just 1 month, according to sources close to Parker. There's no physical relationship between Tony and Aaron, the source said. There was texting that went on for a while and probably crossed the line. Ava found it by looking at his phone. The actress filed the documents in Los Angeles Superior Court this week. She later tweeted, "It is with great sadness that after 7 years together, Tony and I have decided to divorce. We love each other deeply and pray for each other's happiness."
I'm still unclear about the phrase, a look-alike teammate's wife. What does that mean?
I think maybe, well, I'm waiting. I was looking for it to tell me. And it means that he looks like his teammate. That apparently Tony Parker and Brent Berry look alike. I think.
It seems like an odd thing to put in the story.
It does seem like an odd thing to put in the story, especially if the story later does not actually explain it. Which
okay.
It does not. So
maybe you just set the story down and then come back to it later. Maybe it'll marinate.
We'll
maybe
just
it'll
put it away and just. Of course, it's Eva Longoria. I don't even really care. So.
Well, I don't care about the Eva Longoria part. I'm just confused about the. I'm confused about whether he looks like the teammate or whether he's in fact cheating with somebody who looks exactly like his wife. You know, in other words, is it a woman married to a teammate, but the woman happens to look a lot like Eva Longoria? Well, we'll move on. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Wayne Newton's Las Vegas estate is a lavish wonderland, complete with South African penguins, sweeping crystal staircases, and an impressive memorabilia collection, including a Frank Sinatra champagne glass, Nat King Cole's watch, Steve McQueen's Rolls Royce, and a Johnny Cash guitar.
And the spine of John Larroquette.
If only. The estate is so resplendent, Newton said, that he plans to open his gated home to the public and turn it into a tourist attraction. The project, some have dubbed Graceland West, won initial approval from the local government board in Las Vegas on Wednesday, paving the way for Newton to open his tours as late as 2011. The attraction has caused friction between the entertainer and his neighbors, who are opposed to noisy tour buses in their affluent neighborhood of ranches and mansions 6 miles from the Las Vegas Strip. In Newton's vision, visitors to Casa de Shenandoah will tour selected parts of his 10,000-square-foot home, adorned with plush white carpets, gold-trimmed doors, impressionist paintings by Renoir, and 17th-century antiques collected from European castles.
Casa de Shenandoah.
Casa de Shenandoah.
As long as it's a subtle, understated name that isn't tacky at all.
Yes. The attraction could employ more than 400 people while recreating a new cash cow after years of financial troubles. Newton filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in 92 to reorganize an estimated $20 million in debts, including a $341,000 IRS lien for back taxes. In 2005, he disputed IRS claims that he and his wife owned $1.8 million in back taxes.
I'm sorry, that he and who?
His wife. Oh, he has a wife.
Uh-huh.
Wayne Newton has a wife.
Okay. You know, Elton John had a wife.
More recently, sheriff's deputies were turned away from the ranch home in February while trying to collect a $500,000 court judgment stemming from back pay owed to a former pilot. That same month, his billionaire friend Bruton Smith, chairman of NASCAR racetrack owner Speedway Motorsports, tried to seize Casa de Shenandoah for repayment of a $3.35 million loan.
I love the idea of Wayne Newton being involved in some tense, days-long armed standoff from behind, you know, like a white couch with a Renoir in the background and a polar bear rug in front of him or something,
yes.
As federal agents or perhaps his billionaire friend try to seize the house from him.
And but at least he has the comfort and love of his wife.
You know, his what?
His wife.
You keep saying that, and I think you mean something else.
Wayne Newton has a wife.
Also has a street named after him in Las Vegas, by the way. There is a Wayne Newton Boulevard. Mm. It seems like if you're going to get a street named after you, he's one of those guys that it's, you know, because I think they gave him the key to the city or something in Vegas. It seems like he's one of those guys that just makes so much money that because he's just a constant attraction at that time. I mean, I don't think he's ever quit performing in Vegas. Seems like Vegas himself, you know, Vegas themselves, you know, the city as an entity ought to just float him the money to pay whatever it is he's got to pay. Like, he could just call up Steve Wynn and be like, look, you know, I'm never leaving. You know, you basically own me, like, forever. Can you just, like, float me a little something? And yet, no. So Graceland West is what they call that?
Well, that's what they're calling it, sort of derisively.
Oh, I see. So it's not, they're not saying, it's not a, that's an ironic designation they're using.
Yeah, and his insanely wealthy neighbors who own the nearby estates and ranches are kind of like, no.
We wish Wayne Newton didn't live here. All right. Let's bring to an end this episode of Legion. of news here on Friday, November 19th, 2010. Now, forget the program comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agle, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemerson.com. Until next Monday, have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you Monday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Thank you for listening.